The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I just want to say as we go on the air tonight that my thoughts and prayers are with everyone in Paris during this awful tragedy. And I hope that everyone who's been affected is taking care of themselves and each other. Have you ever wondered what the I stands for in the very long alphabet soup LGBTQIA? So I know you've heard LGBTQIA probably at least once, if not 10 times on this show. But the I stands for intersex. And today, that is the subject of our show. A couple weeks ago was Intersex Awareness Day, and I realized then that we'd never done a show on the subject, so I'm really excited to do this one. But first, I have to catch you up on a few things. My trip to the East Coast was really good, but I caught a cold, and the cold stayed with me, and I brought the cold back with me to LA, and it really kicked my butt. So first, I have to give huge thanks to my associate producer, Raymond Johnson, who stepped in and took the wheel and the mic and did a great show last week with Neil Strauss. I feel so lucky that I have a producer who also can just jump right in there at the last minute because I was in no shape to speak to you. Also, we're live today, so you can give us a call at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. You can also post questions for me and our guests on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. I want to remind you this weekend, the LA Academy of Sex Education is hosting a class that I am debuting for the first time. It's called Opening Up, an Open Relationship Intensive. It's in Los Angeles this Sunday, November 15th at the Stockroom, and there are tickets still available. You know, there are really few established scripts or visible role models for open relationships, so often people who are in them can struggle without support and guidance. I've taught a lot of 90-minute workshops on open relationships, and one of the things I've found is that when people bring questions and real-world problems to these classes, I only have a few minutes to kind of assess the situation and work through like strategies with them. So I developed this 4-hour intensive program because I wanted to give people an opportunity to go deeper for me to be able to get the greater context of their relationships and help them in negotiating different issues and solving problems. So I'm going to do all that and more at the Stockroom. And also we're doing a super special giveaway. If you call in today only, this hour, if you call in with a question, you have a chance to win free VIP tickets to that class. This is going to be like a retail value of over $250, and they're transferable. So if you are not in Southern California, but you call in and then you want to gift those tickets to someone, you can, because I'm flexible like that. Now, if you're listening, but you don't want to call in because you're shy, or you're listening to this, but we're not live, you can use the coupon code SEXOUTLOUD to get $20 off your registration. You can go to puckerup.com and you'll see the event listed there, and you can click to register. You can also go to eventbrite.com and search for Open Relationship Intensive. Online registration closes Saturday, 5 p.m. Pacific, but tickets will be available at the door on a first-come, first-served basis. And I want to remind you, now that you know that you could win something, that our call number is 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Let me tell you about today's guests. Emily is an artist, animator, and the youth leadership coordinator for Interact. She received her BFA in animation and spent the last few years working at the Cartoon Network's Emmy Award-winning Adventure Time. In 2004, she came out publicly as intersex and has been advocating for intersex people ever since. She hopes to become a voice for intersex youth and is currently pursuing her master's in community leadership. Emily also worked as a coordinator on the MTV show Faking It and was instrumental in developing the character of Lauren, who is intersex. She also recently launched a great YouTube show called Intersex Experiences that you should all check out on YouTube. And our other guest tonight is Sean Seifel-Wall, an artist, activist, and writer. He's the founder of Emerge, a project that increases social impact through visual artistry. Emerge is the compilation of his life's work that is grounded in community, encompassing both his activist and creative contributions. He originally hails from the Bronx. Hello, Bronx. But has lived in San Francisco Bay Area before settling in Atlanta, Georgia, where I just was, where he calls home. Seif has been published in Gender Outlaws, The Next Generation, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, Untold Stories, Life, Love, and Reproduction, and most recently in the journal Narrative Inquiry in Bioethics. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Seif and Emily.
Thank you, Tristan.
So let's start right off the bat, Emily. I want to not assume I know what my listeners know or don't know, and start at the beginning and define intersex for people.
Awesome. Intersex is basically, it's an umbrella term to describe people who are born with internal or external sex anatomy that doesn't fit the typical definition of male or female. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And
it's very broad.
So it is an umbrella term. It actually it encompasses a lot of different situations, configurations, conditions, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sex is normally thought of as a binary, but really biological sex is a spectrum. And so intersex just kind of covers the rest of the spectrum that male or female doesn't, if that makes sense.
And Seifa, how many people does this affect in the U.S. or in the world?
Roughly 1 in 1,500 or 1 in 2,000 live births are an intersex child. So lately, a lot of the sort of scholarship and thinking about intersex traits are that it's as common as redheads. So if you've encountered a redhead, chances are you probably met someone who was intersex.
Some of my best friends are redheads.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and maybe one listening right now.
And so, pretty soon we're going to be best friends too.
And we're going to be best friends too, because we're all going to go for vegan food at some location that we haven't picked yet. That's like that somehow works for all three of us. Okay, so what do you think, both of you really, are the most common misconceptions and misunderstandings about intersex people?
Go ahead, Seifa.
I'll jump in. I think first, you know, a lot of people think, a lot of people don't know what intersex is. When I remember I was dating a woman and she told her mom, that I was intersex, and her mom was like, is that bad? You know? So I think a lot of people sort of conflate intersex with hermaphrodite. So people think that, oh, if you're intersex, that it's the same as hermaphrodite. And hermaphrodite is pretty much an outdated term. Most often, a lot more people are using the term intersex. And I think people tend to think in terms of biology. So people think someone who's born intersex may have both male and female anatomy. So I think, you know, and Emily can definitely add too, I think there's just a lot of misconceptions floating around about what intersex is.
Yeah, I think just because it's such a nuanced subject and it's so, like, biological sex is so complex, it is really hard to understand. And I think that's also why so many people don't talk about it, because you kind of don't even know where to begin. So that's probably the biggest thing, is there's just a lot of misinformation about out there. And another, I mean, it's something, and this is, some people jump on this, and I think people are quick to include us in the LGBT acronym, and oftentimes will conflate us either as we are trans or we're some sort of sexual identity or orientation, when in fact we're biological sex.
Right, right. And so my other question is, like, what are there basic guidelines? Like, who decides who's intersex?
I mean, usually a doctor can tell. It's a doctor can figure it out, at least. It's the basic guidelines are that you don't align on the typical pathway of biology. So, for instance, for me, if I was biological female, technically I would have XX chromosomes, ovaries, uterus, estrogen production, estrogen response, and you know, like my genitalia would be both a vagina and cervix. And so it's like when there are variation along that pathway, that means that somebody would be intersex. So it could be something as simple as, you know, this girl doesn't have a uterus, or it can be a lot more complex where they have a lot of different variations.
And could it be as simple as you have one, you can be born with one ovary and one testy?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's called ovotestis.
And I wanted to interject for a minute and just say that I think intersex definitely has existed in the realm of medical pathology, where doctors, obstetricians, anyone who is in the birthing room when a woman is giving birth to a child, make an assessment of a child's intersex status based on their genitals at birth, or the way their genitals appear. And I think what we're seeing now, as more stories are coming forward, is that there's so much nuance, right? Like, you know, recently the BBC did a story on the Huevadoches in the Dominican Republic, in Salinas. And a lot of those children, in different parts of the world, you have children that are usually are birthed at home, you have midwives, you may have other people who are not sort of doctors trained in Western medicine who may look at the child and may be like, okay, well, here's a healthy child. The child is okay. The child is not born stillborn. And so the child is, the child may be read as different, maybe not. I think, Emily, you have a very interesting story around your sort of coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Not to put you on the spot.
Well, you know what? We're going to give her a commercial break to think about how much she wants to share.
That's
okay.
True.
I mean, we've like just gotten started. We've got to take a commercial break. But I have a million questions. I'm sure you have a million questions. And you know what? You can ask them by posting them on our Twitter or calling 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Stay with us, more with Emily and Sean Seifel-Wall when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we are talking all about intersex. And Emily and Sean Saifa-Wall are my two guests. You know, before the break, Saifa, you made a really good point. And that's what my original question was getting at. And that is that some of these differences certainly can be about internal organs, or they could be about hormonal differences or chromosomal differences. But when it's a matter of looking at external genitals, I mean, doesn't it seem like then it's just the doctor's call about what they think those genitals mean and what they're going to sort of check off on a form? I mean, it seems to me like there's a gray area there between like, oh my God, this clitoris is too big. It's a big clitoris. Or this penis is too small. It's a micro penis. But like, where it seems to me, if we look at this stuff on a spectrum, we wouldn't be having to make these calls like so hard and fast.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, I think what you asked is a very huge question, right? So I think for me, when I start to unpack that, is to say that doctors are just like anyone else. They're human and they have their own bias. And I think the medical community, I think the bias is rooted in sort of homophobia and misogyny. That a woman's body should look like this, a man's body should look like this. And if a man doesn't have this, you know, opportunity to penetrate his partner, then he should be a woman. And I'm oversimplifying it, right? It's so much more complex than that. But I think what happens is, which kind of brings us back to why I do this work, is for people to have the right to choose what they want to do with their own bodies. But because of the bias that exists, the decisions are made for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what are the statistics on this about how often interventions are made at birth or shortly after birth before a baby has grown up or even exhibited like what gender they are or want to be? I mean, what are the stats on that?
Well, a big problem is that there aren't hard stats because nobody talks about it and nobody knows it happens. Like Saifa was saying, doctors are human, and a huge thing with doctors is they just want to fix things. So they see intersex people as things that need to be fixed, which is not true at all. But the problem is it's not really reported necessarily. It's like, oh, hey, here's a child whose genitals don't look like what I think they should look like, so I'm just going to fix it real quick. And then it's never talked about again. And sometimes it's told to the parents, sometimes it's not. But intersex people with numbers of 1 in 1,500 or 1 in 2,000, depending on what variation intersex people have, that with a world population as large as it is, these surgeries happen on a weekly and sometimes even daily basis, actually, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it can be something as huge. I mean, they're all life-altering, but it could be something like, you know, cutting off a boy's penis or trimming down a girl's clitoris. Or it could be something like removing someone's internal testes or ovaries or gonads. If that makes sense.
And those kind of interventions can happen without parental permission?
Yeah. And we talk about consent, and they can get consent from parents, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily informed.
Right.
For instance, I mean, Saifa also has a good story on this too, but, you know, doctors will tell you you're going to get cancer if we don't remove these. And so that's your consent. And then you're like, well, yeah, of course I don't want to get cancer, so have them removed. What they don't tell you is all the other things that go along with it.
Right, because essentially parents are relying on the doctor. And if the doctor is saying this is what needs to be done, and it's seems like such a traumatic also like and heightened time, I'm assuming there are parents who gave permission who in hindsight wouldn't have if they knew.
Exactly.
And I think sometimes what often happens is that having an intersex child can be a very isolating experience, especially... I think in my family, there was a high number of people who had the same intersex trait, but because of, you know, shame and stigma, we didn't really talk about it. So it was as if, you know, my mom was sort of dealing with this in isolation. And I think a lot of parents deal with their intersex children in isolation. And so they have, you know, they're talking to the doctors and the doctors are really like, well, don't tell anyone. Keep this a secret. Oh, we want to do these surgeries so that when you, you know, take your child to the daycare or when you leave your child with a nanny or with relatives, they will look like any other child. So I think there is like a lot of, I guess, internal conflict that happens for parents because I think a lot of parents want their children to be normal, but I think what it really begs us as a society, the question, like, what is normal? And how can we shift this definition of normalcy? Because it's really impacting people.
Right. And so I'm assuming, let's assume that we want to stop these sort of cycles. If you're a parent or you're a parent to be, like, what do you need to know? Like, what do you need to know so that, A, things aren't done without your permission, and then, B, like, what if someone comes to you and says, we have this difference or this quote, abnormality, what do you want to do? How do parents who want to keep the kids' bodily integrity, how do they deal with it?
I think by just letting their child decide what they want to do with their own body when the time comes, which just means kind of raising them with an open mind. I've been involved. I mean, Saif and I both have at different parts been involved with a support group, AIS DSD support group, mm-hmm. and we'll get parents all the time coming in who are like, I just found out that my child is intersex, or they're pregnant and their child is going to be born intersex, and figuring out what they do. And what's we're starting to see happen is that parents are raising their child. They're probably assigning them a societal gender, but then letting mm-hmm. the child decide as they get older.
Right.
And then you can decide if you want to have surgery, but I mean, that's for whatever reason, but it also depends on your traits and whether or not you want to have surgery.
And Emily, you mentioned the LGBTQIA, and so intersex isn't a sexual identity. So how do you feel about being lumped in with the queer people? Like, is it a good thing? Because sometimes we do good activism. Or is it a bad thing?
Well, I love queer people. So,
hey.
For me, it's not an issue. And I would rather people have a place for us than not. Mm-hmm. So I think that part is really important, that different parts of the LGBT community LGBT plus community will stand in solidarity with us. However, as Saif and I have talked about a lot recently, actually, that it's, there's not everybody agrees with me and not everybody fits under the LGBT or even I umbrella. A lot of people will have these variations, but won't necessarily identify as intersex and won't necessarily identify as part of this community. And a big part of that is just that when you have so many different variations, you get a really wide variety of people and backgrounds. If that makes sense.
Right. And I'm assuming because of the stigma and because of shame, like Saifa said, people don't want to come out because no one's talking about it. And they think they're the only ones.
But I think what's happening nowadays is that people with increased visibility, I definitely see more people coming out. I think we are starting to reach a tipping point. And, you know, I just want to really highlight the history that the intersex community has had with the LGBT queer community. Because when intersex activists were starting to do this work, they were being supported by transsexual menace. And that's 20 plus years in the making. And I think it's not without the LGBT community that the intersex movement is starting to get its feet. And I think we're starting to see a lot of sort of like movement stuff that happens, right? Conversations are being explored. Tensions are arising, healthy tensions, dysfunctional tensions, different opinions, different voices. So I really see this movement starting to grow by leaps and bounds. And I think social media has definitely been the facilitation tool to increase this level of activism.
Because people can come out and have some level of anonymity or because it can connect so many different people.
I think it's both, but I think at least, you know, I think Emily may have a different or shared perspective, but people can say, people can go on YouTube, people can go on Twitter, like the Twitter storm that just happened that Pigeon Pagonis did was amazing. You know, it brought together over 1,000 people who were tweeting all over the world. And people are just like, I'm intersex. This is what happened to me. This is what did not happen to me. So I think social media, again, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, like people are really coming forward and kind of taking intersex out of obscurity, because I think that has, like, oppression, like anything else rooted in oppression, oppression thrives in obscurity. But I think this really, this platform is really giving people the courage to really come forward and being like, I'm intersex, I'm here.
Yeah, and it can be, I mean, I think it's a tool that we've seen a lot of different minority groups use and use in really powerful and positive ways in terms of visibility.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Okay, we got to take another break. Both Emily and Saifa work with an organization called Advocates for Informed Choice. And so coming up after the break, we are going to talk about that organization, what it does, what they do for it. And of course, you can still call us. Are you being shy? Don't be shy. Call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. If you must, because you are shy, then go on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio and post some questions for my guests, for me, about the subject, whatever you want to do. Stay with us more after the break.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in to The Patricia Raskin Show on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This is the program that helps you turn obstacles into opportunities, challenges into solutions, and find answers to tough questions with the award-winning powerhouse voice of radio, Patricia Raskin. So tune in and call in to The Patricia Raskin Show, Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today I'm talking with Emily and Sean Seifel-Wall, and they both work and do different kinds of work for this amazing organization called Advocates for Informed Choice. So I guess, Sean Seifel-Wall, start with you. You're the current board president.
Yes, I am.
So tell me about the organization and some of the things that it does.
Advocates for Informed Choice is a legal rights organization that's dedicated to the bodily integrity of intersex children and infants. So there's the Interact Youth Program that Emily is the head of. What other things that we do, Emily? I sit on the board, so we make a lot of decisions. I'm really not that connected to the programming. I think Emily can provide more information about the programming.
Okay, Emily.
Yeah, totally. So AIC has two main programs, Interact as well as Project Integrity, and our legal teams are working on all sorts of different projects and basically protecting the rights of intersex kids. So, for instance, I can't talk about it too much, but we do have a really important pending litigation about a case in South Carolina where a child was operated on without consent. So you can go to AIClegal.org to learn more about that, but that's kind of the stuff that arm of our organization does. Mm-hmm. We originally started as a legal organization protecting the rights of intersex kids, and now it's really grown, especially in the last year. So as the media has really taken to intersex narratives and intersex stories and wanted to learn more, and our youth program has really driven that a lot, which has been incredible.
And so I know you're also committed, I mean, the two of you are young, and you're committed to having young people in positions of leadership within the organization, which I think is really interesting and fascinating, because I think we tend to think when there's a nonprofit that sort of the older generation or the old guard is going to be kind of in these positions of power. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important for young people to be, you know, in the room and in the conversations?
Well, I think it's especially important for an organization like AIC, where we're working for and with youth, that the youth are there making decisions and having an impact. So that's obviously really important. But I mean, the biggest thing is, I'm sure you know, like, this is our next generation. This is who is going to be changing the narrative in the next 5, 10, even 1 year from now. And so it's really important that they have a chance to speak and kind of make the world what they want it to be, because right now it's not a place that's really friendly towards intersex people. And so I think the youth are really changing that, and they're the ones who are going to be changing the narratives over the next however many years.
And I think, if I can jump in, I think it's very important. I remember I was having a conversation with the legal director of AIC, Ann Tamar Mattis, and she said something which really resonated with me. And she was saying that intersex is a children's rights issue. because I've often looked at intersex issues as human rights issues. But I do feel that when we talk about surgeries, when we talk about the treatment or mistreatment of intersex children and adults, this is definitely both a children's rights issue and a human rights issue. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, coming from a history of social justice, actually empowering youth to be the leaders, I think is so wise, because I think often what happens is that, you know, people have been in these positions, been in power for so long, and are very hesitant to sort of pass the baton. But given that increasingly more and more young people are coming forward and saying that I'm intersex, more and more young people are showing up at the AIS-DSD conference, and their stories are shifting. Like, there's still some of the trauma there, but increasingly there's a lot more resilience. And so what would it look like if we were to bring forward this very resilient generation of young people to lead our movement?
Yeah. I think that's totally a great point, because it's true. The narratives are starting to change, and it's slow, but it's really starting to happen. And it's because of these, it's because the world is starting to see these as human rights violations. Recently in September, our executive director, Kimberly Zieselman, she went to the United Nations and spoke on an expert panel of intersex people, and the High Commissioner and the UN came out and said that these violations against intersex bodies are human rights violations. They're not just things that are happening quietly in a doctor's room, but these are actual human rights violations that need to be changed and need to stop happening, which is huge.
And Emily, I was struck by something that you wrote. There are a bunch of blog posts on Intersex Awareness Day, and one of the things you talked about was that intersex people spend much of our lives in a negative loop.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's changing? Do you feel like there has been a shift as there's been more activism and as there's been more visibility?
There has been a shift. It's been slow, but it's definitely happening. I mean, 30 years ago, when an intersex child was discovered or doctors realized someone was intersex, they most of the time wouldn't tell the parents or the child. A lot of people, for instance, would be told that they had, like women specifically, they'd be told that they had cancerous ovaries, and then they would remove their testes and never tell them that they were intersex, and that they just removed their testes. They just use that as their excuse. And so now they're giving more and more often, they're giving the full truth. And even just within the last year, Interact Youth, we've been working with MTV on their new show, Faking It, and to create an intersex character. And because of that, and because of people talking about that, people are starting to find out that they're intersex within this last year and know what that means already from this TV show. Which, I mean, when I found out, what was it, like 15, 16 years ago now, I didn't have anything. I couldn't find any information positive. Well, anything positive. I found some negative stuff. It's always negative stuff. But I couldn't find anything positive or anyone talking about it in a positive way. And I had no idea what it is. And so that's even just been changing within the last year, which has been really incredible.
And how did you get involved with the show? Because to me, again, MTV is about kind of the next generation. But this is really cutting edge, even for MTV.
It really is. And I think, you know, honestly, when they started, when they had this idea of making an intersex character, they were doing what everyone else in Hollywood has done in the past, where they wanted it to be this like shock and awe value. But they contacted us because they wanted to at least have it be an accurate portrayal, which was incredible because no one in Hollywood does that. When they started hearing our stories, they realized how important it was to change this narrative and to be a positive voice for intersex people. And that's been incredible. So once they reached out and started talking to us, I was working in Hollywood about 5 minutes away from the studio, and I was a member of Interact at the point, and they just brought me in and I started talking to them. And then actually, I think when you introduced me earlier, you said I came out in 2004, but I actually came out in 2014, last year, with the premiere of the Faking It show.
Right, you came out publicly. Yeah, exactly. I must have said that wrong. It is 2014. Yeah.
No, that's okay.
But tell me about that also, that decision. Because it seems to me it's a really big one. For both of you to not only find out that you're intersex, but then are brave enough to sort of step forward and say, this is me, this is who I am. How did you get there, Emily? Because you knew for some time before you went public.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, there was not a lot of positive, good things being said about intersex people when I found out at 10 years old. And I think even back then, I kind of knew that I wanted to change that because I knew that wasn't right at the very least. And so when I had this opportunity, it was just kind of, I just kind of knew that somebody needed to be standing up. And there have been some incredible activists in the past who have really stood up. I mean, Sypha being one of them. But for me, it was something that I just wanted to make a difference, wanted to share my story just because I felt so alone when I had found out. And I didn't want anyone else to go through that same isolation, that same shame, the same discrimination that I had faced in all aspects of my life because of this.
And how did your parents feel about it? I'm assuming they're sort of implicated in this coming out and that there could be issues at play there with how they raised you, the decisions they made for you, or right?
Yeah. I mean, so up until I came out, like I remember I talked to my dad a couple of weeks before coming out and he knew I was doing this work. And he asked me how my transgender thing was going. So I've kind of talked to him about it since then. So they were aware of what was going on and they've been supportive since I've come out, definitely. I think for them, they told me not to talk about it when I was younger because they didn't want me to experience the same shame or the same bullying that many intersex kids have already faced. So they did that out of love, and a lot of parents have done that in the past and still do that of like, you know, don't tell anyone about this or keep this quiet just because you want to protect your child any way you can. And so since coming out, I've kind of empowered myself to do that, and they've been supportive of that, which has been good.
Okay, we've got to take another break already. And where are those phone calls, people? You're making me feel, well, bad. I'm taking it personally. And
me too.
So, yeah, and my guests are taking it personally.
Me three.
See? And so I think someone needs to pick up the phone, and I'm really serious about this. And if you pick up the phone, since we haven't had like a big, long, you know, call waiting line, you'll probably win tickets to my intensive this weekend. So, last time, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. I promise we will not bite you. And we're going to continue talking with Sypha and Emily after the break.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Most successful people have a strategy for their personal and professional advancement. They understand the value of learning from other people who know how to reach their goals and enjoy their lives. You can live life on your terms at home, work, play, and in the community. Join Lori and industry leaders as they share practical insights with you. Only on In It Together with Lori Lynn Green. Mondays at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we are talking with intersex activists Emily and Sean Seifel-Wall, who both work with an incredible nonprofit and have been talking about the different kinds of work they do. So, Emily, you talked before the break about your decision to come out and your parents. Seifa, you have worked as an activist in various social justice movements, but what was it like for you to make the decision to come out as intersex?
I think for me, when you have so many identities that kind of exist within the margins, adding another social identity, I'm not going to say it's a piece of cake, but it's definitely like, okay, I can do this. I was thinking before the break about, you know, why I started to identify more as intersex. I mean, I've always known that I had androgen insensitivity syndrome, and I didn't necessarily identify as intersex. It wasn't a social identity for me. I think for me, being intersex is a sexual identity, it's a social identity, and it's a political identity. So for me, when I decided to transition from female to male at the age of 25, I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was living in the gay Bay. And, you know, there was a group of friends, including myself, and we all decided to transition at the same time. And so my friends were like, woo, you know, they were taking tea and they were like, oh, I feel so great. You know, I'm changing in all these ways. And for me in testosterone, it was definitely a struggle. And so I didn't have the same experience of transition like my FTM friends and brothers. And I think at that point is when I started to identify more as intersex. And just face the reality that the more tea that I take, I may not necessarily experience those changes that my friends did. And I think it was definitely hard to come to that realization because I was very invested in a male identity, and I still am. But I think for me, it's the exploration of, like, what does it mean to be male identified, to live in this world as a man, and not have certain secondary sex characteristics of men?
Right. I mean, of course. But this is a really interesting piece of the puzzle because, like you said, I think that these are particular narratives, and there's these assumptions that, like, testosterone is going to sort of work on everybody in the same way, which also isn't true, right?
Right.
I mean, we've seen the spectrum of the different ways people's bodies change, and it is a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where being intersex sort of, again, like, raises these issues around these binaries and these solid things that we think we can sort of hang on to and say, this is how it is, when it's like a lot more nuanced than that.
Totally. Totally. It's so nuanced. Like, just among in this intersex community of people who've transitioned from female to male, it's definitely so varied. You know, some people are really sensitive to testosterone. And I think another thing that I want to sort of put out there is that a lot of medical providers sort of lump a lot of intersex traits into androgenic sensitivity syndrome. So I think a lot of people who may have gonadal digenesis or Klinefelter syndrome or any number of intersex traits that look like AIS are often assigned as having AIS when they may have another intersex trait. So I think even in the medical community, there's not a lot of awareness of how these traits manifest.
Yeah, which is usually why we like to say it's on a spectrum, because again, like just like our society loves shoving things in boxes, doctors will want to shove certain intersex people into a box of a certain syndrome or condition or something when it's not. It's a lot of times it's a lot more complex than that. And kind of going back to what you said about it being so nuanced and so complicated, I think that's why like we can't ever, or we have such a hard time talking about it, is because we can never get past those 101 conversations, those what is intersex. We just spend so much time like talking about that we can never talk about like the lived experience.
So how do we get past the 101? I mean it's in some ways we need to keep having it until everyone has some agreed upon knowledge, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that's why you mentioned earlier, I just started a YouTube channel, and that's kind of what I was hoping to do there, is that I could start with the 101 presentation and do like maybe one or two of those videos and then move on to other lived experiences. And if people needed to go back and reference that, they could, but we could get the 101 out of the way, because for the most part, we'll do an interview like this, or we'll write an article or be interviewed for something else. And it's hard to get past that 101, or like if Nightline covers it, for instance, you know, it's like, here's the 101 information, and then that's it.
Okay, well, I can make a commitment to have a 201 conversation now that we've had the 101.
Hey, that's what's up.
Right?
And that is what's up.
And then we can like say to people, okay, so this conversation's coming up. Now, if you haven't listened to this other show, you should do that first, because you're not going to know what we're talking about in the second show.
That's right? Really smart.
Right?
And I think for me, what I see is that we as intersex activists and those of us who are committed to sort of intersex liberation is that we really have to build the capacity for folks to understand what intersex is. And I think when we have that foundation, then we can sort of build from there. Because when I talk to people about intersex and what it means and how it affects people, people are on board. This is a no-brainer for people. Mm-hmm. People are like, yes, I get it. You know, people are not fighting it. People are not like, oh, I think people may bring up issues of like, wow, what it must mean for a parent to have an intersex child, or, oh, I can imagine how hard it is, right? I think people really get into the feeling of it, but for the most part, people are really understanding. So the thing is, if we can really get that information out there in a really big way, imagine what the ripple effect it would have.
Right. But I think it's still, you know, I was struck that my partner has gone back to school and he has to take, for various reasons, he has to take Sociology 101. Okay. So he's taking it and he brought his textbook into me and there's like a whole thing on hermaphrodism, hermaphrodites. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this was published like in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're still... I thought we're not using that word anymore and we know so much more. And why is this still here? So I feel like it's in some ways like not everyone has caught up here.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, we're always the unicorns in textbooks.
Yeah, seriously. I was just like, oh God. Okay, we are out of time. But we're not totally out of time because I've already committed to this 201 conversation.
Yes.
You've got to have it really soon. So then, you know, I mean, the conversation will continue. But I want to tell people all about how to get in touch with you first. And just thank you, Emily. Thank you, Saifa, for being on the show, for doing the 101 again, and for doing the important work you do in the world.
Thank you for having us, Tristan.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you. You do. Sorry for interrupting. Thanks for having these, for starting these conversations and continuing them.
So Emily is an artist, an animator, and the youth leadership coordinator for Interact. You can find out more about Emily at emilord.com. Follow her on Facebook and Twitter at emilord. Sean Seifelwall is an artist, activist, and writer, and the founder of Emerge. Find out more about him at Saifa Emerges, SaifaEmerges.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Sean Seifelwall, and we're going to have all that on our Twitter feed. Advocates for Informed Choice is a legal rights organization dedicated to the bodily integrity of intersex children and infants. Find out about them and donate at AICLegal.org. And then Interact is a program of Advocates for Informed Choice. It's the first and only intersex youth leadership and movement building group in the world. You can find out about them on the AIC website or at interactyouth.org. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of this show or want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes. And I love it if you give me a review on iTunes because it really helps people find the show. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's going to be another live show. And then the week after, we have a pre-record because of the holiday known as Thanksgiving. That's not my call. That's someone else's call. But until then, hit me up on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to VoiceAmerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.